This is Crimes Against Humanity, a Stargate Atlantis Dark AU, written by Separus and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated NC-17, contains the pairings of Rodney McKay, John Shepard, Elizabeth Weir, Taylor Imogen, Laura Cadman, Carson Beckett, Elizabeth Weir, Evan Lorne, and past John Shepard, Cameron Mitchell. The story contains the following warnings. Canon AU, Dark Universe, violence, bloodshed, knife play, torture, off-screen rape, non-consent and dubious consent issues, drug addiction, drug withdrawal, power hierarchy and power imbalance, prison, medical experimentation without ethics, murder, mayhem, assassinations, explosions, brainwashing, piracy, verbal and physical abuse, political uprisings, self-harm. Reader's note. Separus mentions that this is a work-in-progress story, and that the universe is currently unfinished. However, I felt that where the story ended was a good ending for the story, and so I decided to devote 5 hours to podficking this. There's still plenty of space in the universe for things to go in different directions that aren't covered in this story, but I felt like the story, the parts that were covered, told enough of the story to make it worth my time and yours. However, if the fact that the author calls it a work in progress is going to leave you unsatisfied at the end, maybe this isn't the podfic for you. There are also some accompanying snippets and associated stories in this universe, which I have also podficked. In addition, I feel I should mention that this entire universe was recorded over the span of 6.5 months, so there will be some places where the background noises don't quite match up. Happy listening anyway! Atlantis was a neutral colony before it became a prison camp, split between the mainland facilities and the ocean-bound city itself for the war criminals and those convicted of crimes against humanity. Alcatraz. He'd heard Shepard drawl when he arrived in the gate room, manacled and bruised from a scuffle in Colorado gate room that ended with 4 injured Marines. Inescapable, or so they said. But Shepard's single word reminded him that nothing's inescapable. They just haven't figured out how to do it yet. Rodney's restrictions keep him from the computers, unwired rooms, as low-tech as an ancient facility light years beyond human evolution can possibly manage. Setting his hand against the wall, he feels the hum of energy just out of reach, the flashes of power that pulses into his palm like heat, watching the flicker of the force fields, memorizing the new modulation like he does every day, like there's a damn thing he can do about it. God fucking damn it, he hates this place. Looking out of his cell, he watches Shepard being brought down the hall, accompanied by 10 special ops, Zats trained on his every movement. Tall and rail thin, bloodstained prison uniform and messy dark hair, moving like Naquadah-reinforced manacles at wrists and ankles, don't weigh any more than air. The dark head lifts briefly, eyes flicking to study the lines of cells that were once living quarters. And for a second, Rodney feels that intense gaze on him. Just a second, long enough for a pretty quirk of his mouth, and Rodney nods back, introductions done. The cell across from Rodney is opened, and Rodney's view is blocked as one of the men presses the zat against John's throat, forcing his head higher, stripping away the manacles and pushing him inside. Rodney hears the sound of a body hitting the floor, straining his neck enough to see Shepard on his feet, moving almost too fast for the eye to see, but they're ready, the force field going up instantly. Rodney winces as John's thrown back with a shower of sparks, hitting the far wall, the sound like a rotten watermelon slamming into the ground. Atlantean prison guards don't bother with banter with the prisoners. Work done, they set the passwords and leave. Grabbing his one chair, Rodney pulls it to the doorway, sitting down to wait for Shepard to recover consciousness. It's been a while since he had a neighbor, after all. 4 years ago, Dr. Rodney McKay was the toast of the scientific world, consulted by the Asgard for his work in subatomic particle physics, and winner of the Nobel Prize twice over. He pioneered the creation and engineering of the first-ever ZPM-based bomb, and extended his research to learning how to create ZPMs using vacuum energy from their own universe. 13 hours into his first tests, he wiped out a living solar system, leaving blackened asteroids and the extermination of 16.3 billion lives. Later, Rodney still thinks his biggest mistake was not killing Dr. Radek Zelenka with the rest of his staff after the failure, as Zelenka's testimony was integral to the prosecution that stripped him of his titles, his accomplishments, and sent him to rot the rest of his life away on the outskirts of the universe, convicted of crimes against humanity before an intergalactic panel. He's still a little bitter about that. Shepard, he learns, was brought in under an intergalactic warrant. Crimes unlisted, but Rodney's been around a while, and rumors are as good as fact. There was once a country, and now there's a barren wasteland. The levels of radiation so high that it's impossible to survey, burned into dust. There was an Asgard embassy, and now there's rubble. There was a president, and now there's a corpse. And that's just what they know about. Shepard's quiet, but he's intense, and Rodney watches him pace his cell for 2 days, running long fingers over the walls and checking the unmoving panels and flat, smooth floor. A thorough study of a 12-by-12-foot cell, with the meticulousness Rodney approved of. On the third day, though, it gets boring. There's no way out, Rodney says, watching Shepard do his 30th study of the panels by the door. How are they powering this? Shepard asks, not looking up. ZPM, Rodney says, and the bitterness in his voice brings Shepard's head up, pushing too long hair from his eyes to grin, sudden and bright. Christ. Huh. Shepard drops liquidly to the floor, legs neatly crossed. Isn't this place supposed to be mind-controlled or something? Rodney waves a hand. ATA was deactivated, Rodney says, and Shepard's eyes flicker. And it's not like anyone here has the gene to use it anyway. Rodney thinks of Carson, 6 cells down, writing his theories on the walls of his cell these days. And Rodney might mock, but his own walls aren't any better. Absently, he flexes his hands, looking away from nails bitten to the quick, the crusty lines of dried blood at the tip of every finger. Huh. Shepard leans forward, resting his elbows on his knees, watching Rodney with bright, curious eyes. Dr. Rodney McKay, right? Duh. John just grins. And I suppose you're the one that did the first live test of my ZPM in atmosphere? God, what he wouldn't have given to see it. John's grin widens. My reputation precedes me. Nice to know. So the question is, why the hell is someone like you still locked up in here? Rodney crosses his arms. Oh, I don't know. The force field may be an issue? Armed guards? The fact that I can't so much as look at a touch telephone? Any of that penetrate? Scratching his chin, Shepard considers him for a moment, then his eyes snap to the side, leaning forward and craning his neck at the sound of multiple footsteps. Definitely more than the 4 required for any visit to this level. Getting as close to the force field as he dares, Rodney sees 6 gray-clad bodies surrounding a tall, slim woman, in prison white, head up. Familiar in that way that their kind are always familiar with each other. And then Rodney's memory puts it together. Elizabeth, Shepard says, softly enough that only Rodney can hear. Elizabeth's eyes stay straight ahead, but Rodney isn't fooled. She notices everything. The cell beside John's is opened, and she's pushed inside. Standing straight, she stays in the center of the cell while the force field is activated, unmoving and quiet. Only when the guards are gone does she move, coming to the very edge to glance around warily. Closer up, Rodney can see the dark circles under her eyes, the pallor of too much time spent in a South American prison before extradition. The fragile bones of her collar are in stark relief beneath the thin skin, and her slow movements tell him that her clothes are hiding some less savory results of spending too much time with guards not acquainted with the Geneva Convention standards. He can feel her eyes flick over him, pause, then dart back. McKay? Rodney waves. Got it in one. Nice to see you again, Dr. Weir. Her mouth quirks in an amused smile before her gaze darts to the side. And Shepard, I presume? Presume all you want, Shepard says expansively, leaning his head on one hand. Anyone else would look silly, Rodney reflects, but not Shepard. So I guess your government failed? The dark eyes narrow sharply. And your famed ability to vanish into thin air abandoned you? Oh, yeah. Rodney sighs, leaning back in his chair. Yes, 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 we are all here because we didn't get away. And, hello, some of us have been here a couple of years, so spare me the self-pity. Flexing his fingers, Rodney watches Shepard uncoil himself, standing slowly, eyes fixed on the wall separating him from Elizabeth. I'm glad we've all gotten to know each other. Now, if you'll try to be interesting now, that would be nice. Before Carson was moved, at least he'd been subject to fits of psychosis, and watching had pretty much been Rodney's only form of entertainment. This isn't as fun, but at least it promises to break the monotony. Shepard relaxes. You know, you have to wonder. Finding his chair, he drags it to the edge of the force field, slumping into it in a way that should, by all rights, be impossible. Wonder? Rodney says sharply, when Shepard lets drift. The dark eyes are unfocused, still everywhere. Wonder what? Whose ass is going to go up in a sling when we get out of here? Turning his head, he smiles slowly, all teeth. You win? During trial, Rodney's lawyers hadn't been able to break Zelenka's testimony that Rodney had already been aware of the danger of his research and that his test in a populated solar system had been both deliberate and with malice aforethought. There are reasons for this, though the truth is, Zelenka is pretty close to right. 15 hours before the first stage of the testing, Major Samantha Carter was touring the fourth planet after formally opening an inquiry into the deaths of 10 of Rodney's most recently deceased staff. So really, when he thinks about it, he just can't see how he's to blame at all. For a few weeks, Rodney has some questions on Shepard's sanity. Socializing with the other prisoners has never been restricted, something the Nox and Asgard had insisted on during their negotiations for alliance with Earth. Group exercise is provided in the wide inner courtyard under heavy guard. A city island in the middle of the ocean isn't something any of them are going to voluntarily try to run out of without an active gate. Very rights of prisoners, even the ones you never expect to allow to breathe free. Every afternoon, just as the sun passes its zenith, their block is led here, 2 hours of free time surrounded by force fields and armed guards, before another 22 hours in their cells. Rodney blinks up at the narrow stripe of sky and wonders if he's actually as pasty as he feels. Even Shepard's tan is fading, pale winter gold from dark brown, hazel eyes flickering green when they catch the light. The women come out later, not that there are many besides Elizabeth and Carson's scary wife. Shepard crouches, eyes flickering around the ground, probably looking for weaknesses, but for all Rodney knows, maybe he's noticed their uniforms don't fit. Special ops, Shepard told him once when he asked. Special conditioning. Shepard had leaned into the wall, thoughtful. I read up. They have to pass an intergalactic committee to get an assignment here. Incorruptible. Tell me something I don't know, Rodney had snapped. The second in command is a junkie, Shepard had said easily. Ford, Rodney says, circling Shepard. As he passes, he sees Shepard's gaze meander up, fixing on one of the balconies briefly. Then he stands up. Every time, every guard tenses, and Rodney thinks it just might say something, that a room full of the most notorious scientists and criminals in the Milky Way doesn't freak them out half as much as the slightest twist of Shepard's smile. Rodney tries to see what Shepard saw in Ford. The dark face is still, but now that he's looking, he can see the tension around his mouth, the tight look around his eyes. Rodney remembers his days on amphetamines. There's a look you get when you're going without, and Ford has it in spades. When he looks at Shepard again, Shepard nods briefly, stretching as he makes a circuit of the perimeter. The other prisoners have avoided him since the first fight 3 weeks ago. And for that matter, how long is Bates going to be in the infirmary anyway? But they avoid Shepard, and so they avoid Rodney, which Rodney admits he's getting used to. Getting your ass pounded into the floor 3 times a week gets old, and he worries about concussions. The guards break it up, but Rodney suspects they give it a few minutes for the entertainment value. Shepard drops on one of the smooth, bolted metal benches, smiling as Rodney follows him. It's the warmest part of the courtyard, highly prized, and pretty much the demesne of Shepard alone. No one's bothered since the second fight to even try. Sumner's watching. Rodney doesn't bother being subtle, craning his neck to see the red-clad commander on the balcony besides Ford. In all his time here, he's only seen Sumner twice, and always from a distance. Sumner never dirties his hands with his own prisoners if he can help it. Why? Shepard licks his lips. For the first time since Rodney met him, he looks nervous. I used to serve with him. Sumner's eyes are on them, on John, the entire time. Rodney feels his back begin to crawl at the narrowed focus, laser intense and utterly unflinching. He can't, Rodney says, but the words stop in his throat. Atlantis is a modern, enlightened, commission-overseen prison, bright and lovely and humane and boring as shit. But that doesn't make it any less a prison. And they're a very long way from Earth. After Shepard is taken from the courtyard, Rodney doesn't see him again for 2 weeks. The thing about Elizabeth Weir isn't her work for the Goa'uld, because that was impossible to prove, though Rodney's pretty sure it's accurate. Her bloody coup that united South America into a single force under her command, with a serious chance of taking over the planet? Again, brilliant and dangerous, but on the scale of criminality for Atlantis, it was pretty standard. Her deal with the Ori, turning over 35 Nox and Asgard peacekeepers for interrogation and torture in exchange for their assistance in taking Earth? That had gotten her ass here. A woman who is willing to play the part of god or mystic or diplomat, whatever the situation required. Her cult's still going strong and petitioning for her release, he's heard. They leave offerings of bodies all over the galaxy. They don't talk much. Elizabeth is like Shepard, happy with silence, but she doesn't do anything else, either. Rodney's getting envious of Grodin down the hall, where every Thursday Carson has one of his episodes, screams echoing down the hall and the pounding of a body against unyielding metal. They won't let him look at a computer, touch a wire, life bound by books, a small cell, and 2 hours beneath the sky every day. Insanity, Rodney thinks, watching Elizabeth sitting cross-legged in her cell for hours on end, has started with a lot less than this. "Where's Shepard?" she asks the second day. Rodney shrugs, but the truth is, he's beginning to wonder, too. "Sumner," he says, and she opens her eyes. "Oh." She stretches her legs, studying the force field with a thoughtful expression. Her head cocks slightly, mouth tightening into a thin line. She doesn't say anything else. Rodney really misses Carson. Shepard's brought back, pale and pounds lighter, showing signs of flesh regeneration at the small of his back and into the waist of his pants when he changes shirts. He talks even less than he did before, but the restlessness is back, like something's burning him up inside. They don't hear much from the outside world, but they do hear some things, which is why Rodney is surprised but prepared when half the wing is cleared and Shepard is shoved into his cell, when 10 Athosians are brought in for temporary storage until the next dial-up to Earth. The guards are doubled, and suddenly the 2 hours a day is switched to one. Or I, Elizabeth says briefly, looking fond. Shepard's even thinner than Rodney thought, fragile bones beneath too thin skin, and a change of clothes shows exactly why regeneration was required, making Rodney wonder how Sumner explained why a prisoner would need such extensive surgery. Shepard twitches at the most casual touch and occasionally wakes at night with his hands around Rodney's throat, but he always stops as soon as he comes back to himself, and honestly, this is about the most interesting life's been since Rodney was exiled to the Pegasus Galaxy, so he's not complaining too much. Shepard's chattier in such close quarters, curling up on the foot of Rodney's bed, wrapped in their combined blankets, telling him about the last few years in the Milky Way that he's missed. The Afghanistan ZPM explosion, assassinations, the return of Dr. Jackson from the dead, and the efforts of Jack O'Neill to repair negotiations with the Asgard after John had started destroying their embassies. "Why did you?" Rodney had asked, and John had grinned, stretching out beside him with a wince when it pulls the tender flesh of his back. "I was hired to." He shrugs a little, and Rodney watches the dark eyelashes fan over his pale skin, the way his mouth quirks. "Not like the ZPM, though." He opens his eyes, eyes shining. "That was a thing of beauty." Rodney pushes himself up on one elbow and leans closer. "Tell me about the damage again," he breathes, and John begins to whisper casualty and mutation rates, the massive environmental destruction unseen on any planet before. And then he tells Rodney how he worked the equations to calculate the destruction perimeter, how he adapted Rodney's greatest achievement to create something that could have destroyed a world. Rodney falls in love with the sound of his voice, the cadence of his speech, and the way his eyes shine when he tells Rodney that one day they'll test it on Earth, watch from the sky as they destroy a world together. The next dial-up to Earth is cancelled for reasons unknown, but Elizabeth's suddenly watching the halls like a hawk and talking to the other prisoners. Late at night, Rodney wakes to find Shepard seated by the force field, listening to Elizabeth with wide eyes, and later, when Rodney pulls him back to bed, John tells him what she told him. She wants out, and she thinks they can do it. "How?" Rodney asks, beneath the mask and cover of blankets, closing his eyes against the warmth of John's body. What Sumner's doing to him makes Rodney wary of sex, but it's been 2 years, and he's just not sure he can hold out against that lean body much longer. "Figuring it out," John says softly, eyes bright, and Rodney believes him. The upshot is, Elizabeth gets a roommate, the elusive leader of the Athosian terrorists, and John takes up permanent occupancy in his bed. The Athosian also offers up the kind of visual porn that was seriously lacking in Rodney's life before John came, and between the two of them, the number of times he is jerking off beneath the covers has tripled. Taylor Imogen and Elizabeth are weirdly compatible in that way that women can be when their goals are the same. Every night, Rodney wakes up to hear the two of them work on John, and every day, he listens to John make plan after useless plan. Useless, but interesting. Rodney knows shit about strategy, but what John's doing is the kind of stuff Rodney thinks the most former soldiers just can't do. "The ATA," John says finally, leaning back, and Rodney pulls him back to bed, mostly to feel the lithe body curl around him again, run his hands over too thin skin, and feel the shape of his bones. Sumner's weekly meetings with Shepard haven't gotten any easier, and Rodney dreads and waits for the mornings he wakes to find John returned to him, crouched in a corner, wild-eyed and simmering. Coax him to bed, and feel John wrap around him like a blanket, clinging fingers and soundless rage that beats against Rodney's skin like the feel of his heart. He wasn't fond of Sumner before, but Rodney's beginning to think that when Earth goes up in a gaseous cloud, Sumner is going to enjoy the view from vacuum. What about it? We need it. John breathes against his skin, and Rodney wishes to God that John would stop moving his thigh like that. We can... You know what the ancients were, what the city was. The most secure place in the galaxy, Rodney says, but it's an interesting thought. Rodney turns it over in his mind. But we can't use it. We need the gene. Carson, John says softly, head pushing under Rodney's chin like a giant puppy. Rodney runs a soothing hand down John's back, feeling him arch into the touch. A few weeks of conditioning, and John pretty much lets Rodney touch him whenever he wants. Familiarity, in this case, definitely does not breed contempt. Gene therapy. He was working on... Right. Carson theoretically has the gene, but not in any useful way. He could make lights come on, and that was about the scope of his talents outside the lab. John lifts his head. You have an idea? Maybe. Not yet, but I'm getting there. John smiles, curling back up against him, and Rodney resigns himself to a restless night and a quick jerk-off while John's sleeping in the morning. I like their guns, John murmurs. Zats, Rodney corrects absently. One stun, two kill, three vaporize. John snickers. Why bother with stun? It's a question I often ask myself. God, we have to figure out why they're not dialing Earth. John shivers, and Rodney pulls the covers closer over them, thinking of Elizabeth's murmurs of Ori conspiracy. But for some reason, he just doesn't believe it. He's noticed, however, that they're cutting the power to environmentals, conserving energy, which argues that the officials are worried about power, which means they're worried about supplies. And he's noticed that they're getting a lot more Pegasus Galaxy staples, and less exclusively Earth foods, the last few days. John's noticed, too. Free time in the courtyard has triple guard, what with force fields is pretty much the epitome of overkill. But John looks suddenly about as happy as Rodney's ever seen him. It means, John says softly, as he stretches out on the bench, head in Rodney's lap, like a cat drowsing in the sun, that they're getting paranoid. And paranoid men make mistakes. Rodney watches the rotation again, the way the guards jump at unexpected noises, Ford looking that much grayer, and strokes John's hair. What I wouldn't give for a fucking Palm Pilot, he says. And John's head tilts back, eyes dark and curious. For the force fields, they use the lowest level of tech they could. And with so many unstable geniuses, Rodney admits it was probably a good idea, or there's a good chance that the really crazy ones would blow up the city in a fit of pique. So it's pretty simple to disrupt. Besides, it's what comes after that that would be a problem. John nods, eyes closing under Rodney's touch. From the corner of his eye, Rodney sees Bates limping the far side of the perimeter. Shepard's head turns sharply, pushing himself up as Bates freezes, then turns towards them, and as John stands up, Rodney resigns himself to a week alone in bed. On the other hand, watching John beat the shit out of Bates is the kind of masturbation material you just can't turn down. Leaning his elbow on his knee, Rodney watches John and Bates begin to circle, and hopes the guards don't stop it too quickly. Rodney wakes the next week to John crawling into their bed, smelling of disinfectant from a shower in the infirmary, and fresh blood. Moving over, Rodney sleepily reaches for John beneath the blankets, and his fingers encounter the cold, faintly damp, metal. Opening his eyes, he stares into John's glittering eyes. "Just don't ask me how I got it here," John says, and Rodney wraps his fingers around the palm pilot, reaches for John's face with his other hand, and kisses the smiling mouth, tasting antibiotic and dental regeneration like victory. John likes guns and bombs and weapons of mass destruction, reminding Rodney a little of Zelenka in his enthusiasm for explosions. Rodney shows John his equations, written in ink when he can get it, pencil when he can't, and blood when that's all he has. The work that he's done that's recorded in the margins of his books, the rare paper they let him have, the walls of his cell, the mattress they sleep on beneath the sheets. And John understands, which makes Rodney begin to think that this is all a hallucination brought about by isolation, because no one should be that hot and that smart, sitting naked on the edge of their cot while Rodney is too wired to sleep, quoting masterclass engineering texts and murmuring the sums of strange particles and calculating the fallout in a voice that's made for porn. Pi naught plus n must equal the sum of kappa plus and epsilon minus, John whispers when Rodney scribbles on the wall with bleeding fingertips, sucking Rodney's blood away with his soft, same lips. One planet, two, a solar system, a galaxy. And Rodney watches John get hard beneath the sheet when Rodney tells him the death tolls. Sumner was 5 days back, and Rodney doesn't even pretend he's going to wait anymore. Pushing John down on the bed, Rodney finishes his notes on John's bare stomach, sucking down John's cock and gripping his hips to stop the instinctive arc. Pulling up, he crawls the length of John's body, straddling his hips, cock rubbing the math into flaking smudges, breathing sharply at the glazed look in John's eyes. "Fuck me," John says, and Rodney grins, leaning down to kiss him, tasting blood from a bitten lip, his or John's or both. He's not sure, doesn't even care. "Not until I'm the only one that does," he says, rubbing into John's skin, soft hair tickling his balls, entwining their hands as he rides John's responsive body. "Not until they're dead, and this place, Christ, John, we can have it, we can do it, we can..." "Yeah," John says, breath catching. "I can, if we do it right, Rodney." "We will," Rodney says, ducking his head to John's throat, biting down the curve of his jaw. "Shift change, third to first," John grunts, arching up. Rodney thinks he could die happy like this. 30 off, 60 on, we need, Elizabeth," Rodney whispers, and John's eyes glaze more. "Yeah, she's getting to him," Rodney thinks, setting a mental note aside to watch John more carefully when she and Taylor are talking to him. "She can, oh God, John." "She wants Atlantis," John whispers. "She's fucking nuts," Rodney whispers, just to feel John shiver. Reaching between them, he lines up their cocks, breath catching at the feeling, a shot of heat that rises down his spine. So close, burying his face against John's neck, he bites into the soft skin just below his jaw. "Next time she's up for a chat, let me do the talking." Thinking of the palm pilot beneath his mattress, Rodney shuts his eyes, feeling John's fingers tighten around him, bone rubbing bone. "That's it. Come on, come for me. We'll get all of them. Save Sumner for last. He can watch. You can do anything to him you want. Anything at all." John goes still, shaking, and the burst of heat between them brings Rodney off, too, a rush like falling off a roof or watching a solar system die. Afterward, he traces his fingers through the cum drying on John's stomach, writes his name and his promise into John's flesh with fingers and mouth, loving the way John watches him with naked eyes and sucks his fingers clean. After that, it goes surprisingly fast. Elizabeth's a natural organizer. No surprise there, and she has access to the women, passing messages for Carson when he's lucid enough to talk, pulling together a workable plan out of Shepard's analysis of the guard patterns and the fact that Ford's been demoted to command of third shift. He wouldn't notice a landmine under his feet, Shepard says disparagingly, stretched out on their cot, body relaxed, still too thin, but putting on weight again. There are 10 blocks of 20 prisoners each on Atlantis, not including the mainland facilities. Shepard purses his lips thoughtfully. We want them? Rodney thinks of Kavanaugh and Simpson in the mainland complex and sighs. If he's going to get anything done around here, he's going to need his people. Yeah, we do. Seeing John's mouth turn down, Rodney grins, crawling back up the bed. Elizabeth's got people there, too. Limited to the guards for now. We have plenty of time to work out who stays and who takes a walk through the gate into space after we've secured the planet. John's still tender from Sumner, so Rodney's careful, kissing John gently before relaxing beside him. You okay? Regeneration again. Rodney's watched people die before, but he's thinking that Sumner will be the first to give him a taste for it. Yeah, John says, eyes dark, and Rodney kisses him again, running his fingers through dark hair. John's restlessness is taking sleep he can't afford to lose, and sometimes Rodney suspects Elizabeth's actively working John's instability, though she can't be stupid enough to set him off when they're still confined. Elizabeth's timetable has set them for the night before John's next visit to Sumner, which can't be a coincidence, considering how tense John's gets the closer the time comes. Watching Ford make rounds, Rodney watches him using John's experienced eyes and notices the way his hands tremble, the dark eyes dart, his hand near his zat at all times. John watches, too, coolly evaluative and weirdly hot at the same time. Every time John catches him looking, he smiles, though, and Rodney grins back and thinks of the legendary ancient labs, years in disuse, but waiting for him beyond the walls of his cell, the wide ocean around them, the computers and the databases, the massive collection of ancient data that no one had ever bothered to erase. And how, when this is over, it'll be his. During the trial, when Rodney was restricted to Cheyenne Mountain Military Base, he'd watched as Zelenka inherited his job, taking command of the remains of the science contingent that hadn't died in the lab explosion that destroyed key records needed in his prosecution. The data had been recoverable, Zelenka working day and night to assure that Rodney never saw daylight again. Rodney had listened to his lawyers as they told him in careful words that he was fucked, no deals, listed to the galaxy, call him the greatest mass murderer in human history. Listened as they convicted him to imprisonment, stripping his name from the journals that once celebrated his every word, his awards taken, his work destroyed, his doctorates revoked. It was like he never existed. And when he wakes up in a cold sweat, shaking with hate, he has John pressed against his back, John's voice in his ear, telling Rodney what they'll do with Zelenka when they have him. How many days it will take Zelenka to die. When he opens his eyes again, John rolls him over, and Rodney remembers what today is, the rush so good it's almost painful. Ready? Rodney kisses that smiling mouth, biting John's lip hard enough to draw blood. Yes. Carson's fit starts like clockwork, screams echoing down the hallway, metal chair hitting the metal wall with an off note, echoing bang that makes Rodney's ears hurt and John tends up beside him. Beneath the blanket, Rodney desperately enters his calculations, despite the fact that Carson's really taken it up a notch today. Elizabeth's encouragement or Carson's inspiration, he can't be sure. The door locks at both ends of this hall, John had told him, sketching out a diagram on the floor. They lock themselves in when they do patrols before they unlock to get out. Good for security, bad for them. It leaves them 4 to 8 men vulnerable for the entire length of the hall, with backup having to get through both sets of locks. John had leaned over him, tracing a dusty red path with one finger. Ford's the best armed, but his aim is shaky, and his concentration shit. These two first. John traces a line, grinning. Once we have the hall secure, you can work the doors open. The plan calls for all force fields to drop simultaneously, with the understanding that each block is on its own. Priority is to get control of the computers before they're gassed, which, considering the people they use for tech work here, won't be hard if Rodney has a laptop in, 5 minutes. John stays quiet on the edge of the cot, fully dressed beneath the thin blanket, and shivering in the cold. Rodney thinks, not for the first time, that second priority is getting environmentals back up to par because John's cold feet are beginning to drive him crazy. The hazel eyes are huge and dark, fixed on the hallway outside, his entire body attuned to the barracks, waiting for the activation of the locks that signals the last third shift patrol. Shields, John had said succinctly to Elizabeth. Once the shields are up, no one can get in or out. Communication blackout. John had waved a hand idly, looking bored. Atlantis's weapon systems are deactivated, but they're still here. Shouldn't be a problem. They both hear it at the same time. The soft sound of fingers entering code. The almost inaudible voices of men about to go off shift. Rodney reaches over, placing a hand on John's thigh, muscles thick and tense and almost shaking with anticipation. Across the hall, Elizabeth has shifted to the edge of her cell, cross-legged, and relaxed to casual view, Kayla leaning against the edge of the cell behind her. They wait as the patrol starts, passing the first two cells, Dumais and Kusanagi, the four cells of Athosian prisoners, and Elizabeth makes a soft sound just as they come parallel to John's cell. Carson screams, like someone just killed his mother in front of him, and Rodney, sliding to his knees, enters the last three digits and hopes to God this works. When the fields sputter and die in anticlimactic dark blue fizzles, Rodney thinks, oh my God, it worked. The thing is, watching John with Bates hadn't really prepared him for when John went lethal. John makes violence as good as sex. Better. And Rodney wonders dazedly what he looks like when he took out that first Asgard embassy, if anyone born had ever looked so good. One broken neck and four zat shots later, Rodney comes out to see the other prisoners just beginning to emerge, a little dazed and a little put out, because Elizabeth had revved them up for a serious fight in the halls, and John kind of spoiled that. Coming over, Rodney watches John study the cowering Ford in the corner with bright, cold eyes, Zat tray neatly on his head. Search them, Elizabeth says, somewhere behind him, but John's focused on Ford. How the hell did you get through the sight tests? John says softly, and Rodney frowns, looking down to see Ford pressing harder against the wall. Like calls to like, he remembers abruptly. Rodney, can you activate one force field? Rodney sighs, pulling at the palm pilot. I can, but why? Command codes. John's head tilts. And Ford here would love to be helpful. Crouching, John grins. We'll talk later. Firing off a single shot, John steps back, motioning to one of the men behind him. Bates? Search him and put him in the cell, and there's a private moment with that pretty little guard off block 6 in it for you. Bates limps by, and Rodney watches blankly as Bates picks up Ford's unconscious weight like it's nothing, dragging him to the room before throwing him inside. With another sigh, Rodney reactivates the shield, setting it for a single room, then follows John to the locked door. Can you break it? Rodney frowns at the panels, then shrugs. Low tech. Open it up, blow the interior out. The failsafes will kick in. Stepping back, Rodney tries not to find John's grin as hot as it really is as he pries open the panel with the edges of the Zat, then steps back, pushing Rodney behind him as he takes aim and fires. Bates, John says as the smoke clears and the doors tremble. Stay with Elizabeth. Anything happens to her, you live long enough to watch your guts fall out. The rest of you, fan out. Keep to the plan. John's head turns, eyes glittering dark. Fuck this up, you'll deal with me. Gate room, 15 minutes. Opening the door, John peers out, then turns to Rodney. Ready? No shit. Let's go. Elizabeth had been difficult about what to do with Alpha Shift. We can't lock them out, John had said reasonably, head turning towards Elizabeth from the safety of Rodney's thigh. And we can't fight 80 fresh guards on top of third shift, Elizabeth had answered sharply. Okay, first, that was insulting. I can totally handle them. Second, you have some people on the mainland, right? Elizabeth had nodded reluctantly. Okay, when shields go up, there won't be any communication going out. What we don't want is to alert the 5,000 staff assigned there that anything is wrong in this city by a mass of shifts running back. Not unless we drop a bomb and wipe out the facilities, and Rodney's got some people there he'd like to keep. Scratching his chin, John had closed his eyes as Rodney fondly stroked his hair. And Lauren's there, and he's pretty cool. I'd like to keep him around. Lauren, Rodney'd heard himself say later that night, in a voice that he barely recognized. Funny how jealousy could do that to you. Who is Lauren? John had grinned and pushed him into their cot, arms braced on either side of Rodney's shoulders. An old friend. You'll see. You'll like him. Rodney had doubted that, but when John kissed him, he didn't worry. Carson would need new subjects when they got out, anyway. Coming down the corridor, John keeps in front of Rodney, but it's not like there's much resistance. And it makes sense. The problem with an inescapable, technically advanced prison is that outside the cell blocks, there really isn't much in the way of defensive measures. Rodney picks up a laptop after John wipes out the tech staff in Lab 3, rubbing off the blood from the keyboard with the edge of his sleeve before tucking it under one arm, kicking a body out of his way, and sitting down in one of the Atlantean interface stations. The moron hadn't even bothered to log out when he heard fighting in the corridor, so Rodney finds himself with mid-level access. Pulling up the defenses, Rodney checks the shield and then sets the locks on all the gate ship bays. Life signs show that none of Alpha Shift got out. Cool, John murmurs, looking over Rodney's shoulder. Reaching, John strokes a blood-stained finger in a line. Here, here, and here. Gas? Set it off. Rodney tilts his head up. Why not just blow it? Gate ships? Spaceships. 2 armories, and anyway, why damage the city if we don't have to? He looks as disappointed as Rodney feels. Fine, he says, pulling up countermeasures in neat menus, amazed that anyone would make a system so easy to turn against them. Oh, did you know there's a self-destruct code? Set for command level only. Tilting his head back, Rodney grins. If Sumner tries, think you can get Ford to help override? John grins back, leaning down enough to brush lips in an electric kiss. Absolutely. Got everything you need here? Activating the ATA first, Rodney says, typing. Carson's useless until he gets Lara back, but some functions, yeah, they'll respond better with the gene. Finishing up, Rodney sets a few more of the countermeasures off, then nods, ducking beneath the computer under John's amused surveillance, and pulling 2 of the crystals. Okay, just in case someone gets in here after us and tries to fuck around, and then we... But he stops, watching soft blue light fill the room. Earth-based lamps and harsh fluorescence lost beneath the cool light of Atlantis waking up. Turning in a slow circle, he watches ancient computers slowly begin to beep to life, waking up with a stretch and a yawn, the city seeming to curve around them, around. Rodney had himself tested years ago, and he knows. Oh, my God, Rodney whispers, turning to see John surveying the bright room with weary eyes. It's you. First thing, Jesus Christ, his life can't get any better. All you need to do is think, Rodney says, talking fast. John, two fingers hooked into the back of Rodney's pants, gives him a wary look. Oh, please, Carson can feel it, even if he whines about it too much. Think on, open, activate. Hell, just think of something you want, and if the city can give it, it will. Doors are suddenly marvels of ease. No need to work manual locks. They open smooth and wide every time John comes close, corridors lighting up around them. John beginning to grin and, oh, God, yes! Of course John would have the gene. Okay, we have 5 minutes to get to the gate room. What? This way, John says, head turning. And Rodney follows when John lets go, getting a handful of John's shirt to keep him from getting too far away. We need a better way to communicate. Atlantis has a communications grid built by the ancients that came up when the ATA came online. I've seen examples of the earpiece. The guards use Asgard tech, not compatible with ancient systems. If we can get those, it'd be easier, John says, and Rodney opens the laptop, still moving, bracing it on one arm as he interfaces with the system. There's an armory, 30 feet straight ahead, but we need... Let's see what they have in there, John says, sounding drugged, and Rodney thinks that just maybe he shouldn't have said armory. But even a zat has its limits, and John's going anyway. The door opens for John easily, and Rodney takes a second to enjoy the way John glows as he looks at the crates of P-90s in the corner. Berettas and M-16s, C-4, grenades, things Rodney doesn't recognize, but John does. Reverently, John tucks the zat into his pants, picks up a P-90 with the look of a man in a church. Christ, John whispers, then slides it on, picking up 2 more handguns in a bag, dropping weapons and grenades in. Ammo, got it. And dropping on his knees, John loads 5 guns in less time than Rodney takes to tell him they don't have time. Standing up, John grabs 2 black vests from a high shelf. Put this on, he says, and Rodney sighs but puts it on, taking the gun John gives him and waiting as John gets a gun holster and straps it on. All right, John says, looking almost post-coital standing there, playing gently with a utility knife, expression soft. Now I feel better. You see those communication thingies? Rodney nods, mouth a little dry as he points, and John gets the box down, opening it up and handing one to Rodney before taking one himself. Rodney can hear static until John keys his, another ancient system coming to life around them. This working? Rodney hears in stereo, and he meets John's eyes with a smile. Oh yeah. John shoves them into a pocket of his jacket, and, hooking a hand in Rodney's vest, pulls him into the corridor. Elizabeth's team took the south entrance, leaving them the north. Conventional Asgard locks hold the door closed beneath John's stare, but only barely, and Rodney steps back as John takes out the C4, setting the timer before backing away, pushing Rodney down the corridor and into the wall, John's body shielding his. He's almost deaf when John pulls away, then a jerk pulling him flat onto the floor when zat beams skim the air above them. John's hand on his chest holds him still. Give it a second, John says, slinging the P-90 around, shifting until his back is against the wall. Taking aim, he starts to fire, 1 bare foot pressed to Rodney's chest, a silent warning to stay down. In the distance, Rodney hears people screaming, but he is not sure who they are. John pauses, peering down the smoky corridor, and Rodney stifles a cough at the smell of burned metal and the byproducts of the explosion filling the air. John's foot presses gently into his waist, nudging him, and Rodney scrambles for the wall, laptop clutched against his chest. All right, you stay here. You have got to be kidding me, Rodney says, pulling out his gun. John frowns, but nods shortly, standing up and pulling Rodney behind him as they approach the gutted door. John keeps him back, though, as he peeks inside, but Rodney gets a look at John's smile suddenly burst out, huge and happy, as he unslings the P90, takes aim, and fires once. "Hey, Elizabeth, need some help?" John waves a hand behind him, and Rodney comes up to look over his shoulder. The gate room looks like the scene of a massacre, bodies everywhere, Elizabeth lowering a zat with a contented expression, while Bates and the other man methodically go body to body and put bullets in every head. "Glad you could join us, Shepherd." Her eyes linger on the P90. "Nice gun." On the other side of the room, Sumner leans against the wall, a bullet nearly shattering one kneecap, gun forgotten on the floor beside him. Strolling over, John kicks it farther away and places a bare foot against Sumner's chest, Atlantis's lights coming on around him in welcome. "Nice to see you again, Colonel,"